Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome back, Mike Farrell Sports Talk. My name is Adam, and Mike Farrell with me again for another episode. Again, thanks for listening to us on the Believe Podcast Network and subscribing to the Mike Farrell Sports YouTube page, where you can watch this crystal clear video of Mike and I as we break down all things happening in the world of college football, Mike. And the talk of this week, obviously, there's games, championships, blah, 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 blah. Nobody wants to talk about that, Mike. Everybody wants the rumors. Everybody wants the gossip. Everybody wants the coaching carousel. Coaches are moving. Things are falling into place for a few different universities, Mike, a bunch of different hires over the weekend. I guess we can take some of these in chronological order as they happened. And let's start with one I know you had been telling everyone for a while was going to take place. I know there's some doubters throughout the week, but lo and behold, Matt Rhule is now the head man at Nebraska. I don't think that comes as a surprise to you, but what's the fit you think for Matt Rhule to Nebraska? How good a let's grade the hires, Mike. A to F. Okay. Give me a grade for Nebraska.
Yeah, so I did that on the site.
Look at that, MikeFarrellSports.com, by the way.
No, you're creating content and it's already there. So I gave it an A.
Okay.
You know, and that's a whoop-de-doo, right? But I think it's a really good fit because, you know, Scott Frost was a great fit, I thought, because he was a former player, lives and bleeds, Nebraska, bring excitement to the program, was a hot name. They had to outbid some people for him, blah, blah, blah. But, the one question mark, as you know, covering UCF is, could he coach? Did he inherit this great situation and just sort of, become successful because of that, or could he coach? And it turns out he can't coach. No offense to him, but he can't. They sucked. They lost every close game they were ever in, and it was a disaster. Matt Rhule can coach. We know this. We absolutely are sure of this. Temple, Baylor, Carolina Panthers, NFL wasn't for him, but he was offered $60+ million guaranteed. Of course he was going to take that. But the job he did at Baylor was amazing with all the sexual assault situation, the accusations, and all the drama, losing players, roster depleted. Art Briles even had a mess, and he cleaned it up. He went 1-11, I think, his first year, and then won 10 games, I think, his last 2 years. So 10 or more games. He can coach. Can he recruit? He's not going to get 4 or 5 stars there. He's going to get 3 stars, and he's going to evaluate those 3 stars and make them play like 4 stars. That's what he did to Temple. That's what he did at Baylor. That's what he's going to do. I think he's a great fit. They couldn't have done better than this, to be honest with you. Now, I had Lance Leopold up there with him. Luke Fickell, we're going to get to in a second. Kleiman at Kansas State, great. But for them to come out and get Matt Rhule, I just don't think they could do a better job.
Well, obviously, Lance Leopold signed an extension or will sign an extension to Kansas, right? Doesn't so he essentially took himself out of the running kind of early on that side. It's fair. That's also fair. Do you think Nebraska will give Matt Rhule a fair shake, right? Do you think that, they had issues with Bill Callahan. They love Scott Frost. Mike Riley kind of wore his welcome out pretty early on, even though he probably did a decent job considering everything there. Do you think they'll give Matt Rhule a fair shake?
I think so. I mean, it's an 8-year contract. None of that means anything. Extensions don't mean anything. Nothing means anything, right? Hugh Freeze signs an extension, $5 million at Liberty. We're not going to get to him in a second, obviously, but none of it means anything. You can get out of anything. There's buyouts, $1 million, boosters, donors can get you out of anything and into anything. but they're going to give him an opportunity. I think they realize now, you know, Matt Rhule's not Pelini. He's not a jerk. Pelini's a jerk. Matt Rhule's, you know, a nice little man. And if he can do what Pelini did, which is, you know, recruit effectively in the Midwest, you know, spot recruit elsewhere. I think he's going to recruit well in the Northeast and up down the East Coast because that's where his ties are. I think he's going to recruit well in Texas because that's where he was at Baylor. And I think he's going to also put together a staff that's going to help him recruit the Midwest well. Win 9 games every year. Be in the mix in the West. We saw this year in the West. You don't have to win 9 games. You can win 8 and win that division. So I think they're going to give him plenty of opportunity. I expect, prediction-wise, a bowl game next year, simply because that's how good a coach he is. That may be lofty, but this isn't Baylor he's taken over. This isn't a depleted roster and a horrible football team with a scandal and can't recruit and lost all their recruits in that signing class to the transfer portal immediately because there was some waiver that allowed them to transfer without penalty back then. This is a better situation. He's going to win 6-7 games next season, and they're going to give him an opportunity to grow from there.
Yeah, now he has the portal that he can pluck from, right? And he may find a quarterback or somebody, a skilled player laying around that's looking for opportunity. So Matt Rhule is the first domino. The next one to fall, Mike, I don't know if it was a surprise. I think the name wasn't a surprise, but the location maybe was. Luke Fickell decides to jump ship from Cincinnati to Wisconsin. Now, you had heard his name. I'd seen some rumblings throughout the week that Luke had been talking with Nebraska. I don't know how real any of that really was. But then you see the announcements, obviously, Luke Fickell to Wisconsin. Again, Luke moving, not a surprise. Wisconsin was. So give me two answers here. One, give me the grade. And then give me your level of surprise that Luke Fickell has now got a W on his shirt.
So I gave him an A as well, because if I was going to give Matt Rhule an A, I had to give Luke Fickell an A. Now, it's a different situation. You know, Luke Fickell is similar to Matt Rhule in the fact that he recruits 3-star kids, makes them play like 4s. You know, the Sauce Gardeners, you know, of the world develop under him. He started to recruit a little bit higher level because of the playoff appearance. And they were moving to the Big 12. So, I mean, those things helped him. I think he might recruit a little bit better than Rhule, but it's not the same situation because Jim Leonard is involved here. So, you know, Matt Rhule is going through a situation. Mickey Joseph was the interim coach. Everybody thought that was a nice story. He's a former player at Nebraska, but he had no chance of getting the job, and that was kind of made clear from the beginning. Paul Chryst was fired for Jim Leonard, according to everybody who knows anything close to the program at Wisconsin. Now, I felt that they should make Leonard, who is the longtime defense coordinator and a former player at Wisconsin, make him earn the job. You know, it was on the job training. Don't hand it to him. And they didn't. And they were smart about this. And McIntosh, the athletic director, owed it to Wisconsin fans to do a national search to see if there was a better fit than Jim Leonard. It just so happens that Luke Fickell was interested and they worked out a deal. I think that's great. The problem is he's got a locker room to deal with. Now, he'll win that over. Luke Fickell's a guy who can win over locker rooms with his personality and his winning and all that stuff. He's says the right thing, does the right thing. But he's under a little bit more scrutiny. Matt Rhule is like, oh, my God, come save us. Our last few coaches have been horrible. Luke Fickell's entering this is like, okay, you're not one of us. You better win. And that's a little bit more pressure.
Are you surprised he took Wisconsin? I mean, obviously his name had come up before. I think, you know, now that we know what he had, he was in talks with Michigan State. I think looking back at it, you can maybe see that he realized he had something special brewing at Cincinnati, maybe didn't like the fit there, stayed there, made a college football playoff, you know, a semifinal game essentially, right? Which was unheard of at Cincinnati, or at least a group of 5 team at that point. Are you surprised it's Wisconsin? You feel like Fickell could have maybe waited and gotten a lot of opportunities. What do you think about Wisconsin that, you know, it's going to drag him out of Cincinnati?
Well, I think he was rumored to be a candidate for a lot of jobs that he wasn't rumored to be a candidate for. And by this, I mean, you know, there was all this talk of LSU and USC and programs that weren't really a fit. I mean, this is an Ohio State grad. He's coaching at Cincinnati. He's a Midwest guy. You could say the same about Brian Kelly, of course. You know, he's a Northeast guy, and he didn't have any ties to LSU, but it just didn't seem like a fit down there. West Coast didn't seem like a fit. There was always this talk of, you know, his kids are there. He wants to stay there. It's going to take something special to budge him and move him. So I am a little bit surprised that he jumped now. Wisconsin's a great job. There's no doubt about it. He's making a ton of money. Could he have waited? This is the dangerous thing, you know, and no offense to Matt Campbell, who's making a lot of money, but you wait too long, your star fades. We don't hear Matt Campbell. He was mentioned with Wisconsin. He was mentioned with Nebraska, but he was sort of down fourth and fifth on those lists. Instead of a few years ago, he would have been number one on those lists and everybody would have been dreaming of him. Remember the whole Michigan movement to get Matt Campbell in here and let's get rid of Harbaugh, which is kind of laughable now. You can sometimes wait too long. And I think Luke Fickell knew that. If he's going to jump one more time, it would be to Ohio State. If Ryan Day loses third time in a row to Michigan, who knows what happens there? Fickell comes in. But beyond that, I think he decided to get a job that didn't have ridiculous expectations like Ohio State does, in a division he can win, and that a place would allow him to sort of put his signature. He's not far removed from what they like to do offensively at Wisconsin. He's not a spread and throw it 50 time guy, so he fits in. I think it was just the perfect situation for him. And I think all these other rumors of him being involved with other jobs, kind of crap. I don't think they were true.
Yeah, I also think he looked at what he had in Cincinnati going to the Big 12 and just said, hey, where do I want to make my move, right? And I think he had some special kids there, Mike. You mentioned it. I mean, some of these Group of Five coaches, Scott Frost is another example you mentioned. You hit lightning in a bottle, man. You get some special kids on your team. You develop an Ahmad Gardner, a Desmond Ritter, Jerome Ford, a MyJ Sanders, a Kobe Bryant. Like, you hit the mother load. And then, to your point, you got to strike while you can. So I wasn't surprised that he left, but Wisconsin seemed like an interesting fit. But you like the hire there. So we got two A's so far. Matt Rhule, Nebraska, get an A. Yeah, Luke Fickell in Wisconsin, get an A. Monday, we got our next big announcement. The long-tenured, rumored, whatever you want to call it, Auburn opening is now officially filled. Hugh Freeze will be coming down from Liberty to take the reins at that job, Mike. A lot of back and forth here. So first, give me the grade on Hugh Freeze. And then give me the backstory, because we heard it was Lane Kiffin. You know, we heard some of these other ghost candidates. The last minute, the 11th hour, there were people who were concerned about Hugh Freeze's background and, you know, some of his past transgressions. You know, there was allegedly a movement. Boosters were involved. So give me the grade and then give me the backstory.
All right. So the grade's a B+, and we'll get to that in a second. The backstory is they wanted Kiffin. Jimmy Sexton is the agent for both Kiffin and Hugh Freeze. So
good problem to have, by the way. Good problem to have.
Yeah, it is. And he was having sort of separate negotiations. And Kiffin was like, it was never a slam dunk. You know, all these people who tweeted out as experts, you know, whatever the guy's name is, Sokolov or whatever. But some of these other morons out there, you know, saying Kiffin's leaving Friday, Kiffin's announced this. I saw a bunch of people with either, you know, blue check marks that they shouldn't have or Twitter blue check marks saying this, that, and the other. It was never done. It was never, you know, a locked in deal. Kiffin didn't handle it well. There's no doubt about that. You know, if he knew he was going to stay, and again, I get the business decision. You got to wait and wait and wait till it becomes untenable in your own locker room and in your own situation. You wait and see what the offer is and see what else they'll throw in and see what else they'll come at you with. That's the agent game, and that's what Sexton was doing with Kiffin. But when it becomes untenable, and you lose your locker room, and you lose your last three games, and your team looks like garbage, and nobody's playing, and all the questions are about whether you're leaving or not, as opposed to the game itself, that's when you cut it off. And he didn't do that. And he really did a disservice to Ole Miss players by handling this poorly. But he was never locked into going. There was never a deal in place. There was never.
Why, though? Why do you think that is, that he wasn't interested?
I don't think he wanted to go. I mean, listen, Auburn, what I was told – from somebody who's very close to Jimmy Sexton. I don't talk to Jimmy Sexton. Jimmy Sexton doesn't talk to me. I'm a pimple on the ass of the world to Jimmy Sexton, right? He's not going to talk to me. But I know people who know him. I know a lot of people who are clients of his and all this other stuff. So people close to him told me that this was one of the most puzzling negotiations between Auburn and Lane Kiffin, because neither side knew what the hell they wanted. Auburn really didn't know if they wanted Kiffin, from what I'm told. They weren't sold. They offered him something that was lower than expected. He came back, obviously, higher. He also had, you know, some stipulations as far as boosters and facilities and recruiting and NIL and all this other stuff, as you should with any coach that is in demand. And it was just like neither side really was committed to this. And it would have kind of been an arranged marriage almost through the media. And that's why it sort of fell through. Kiffin has a second chance with his kids and his family and all this stuff. You know, he left Tennessee in the middle of the night. He went to USC. USC didn't work out. Then he went to, you know, Alabama to rehab and then Florida. He's been around. And everybody thinks he's this, you know, renegade gypsy who's just going to move the next job. That's not the case. He likes it at Ole Miss. He feels he has a good situation at Ole Miss. Will he consider other jobs? Of course. But this wasn't the one I think he wanted to jump to. It was too parallel. And he didn't receive from the Auburn side the assurances he expected. We're in the day and age of guaranteed $80 million contracts for guys who don't deserve it. I mean, Mel Tucker's getting $95 million. Brian Kelly had a great season this year, but he's not worth $100 million guaranteed. And we see what Jimbo Fisher gets. There was an expectation of some sort of like throw everything at him, and it didn't happen. So then you go to Freeze.
Hugh Freeze the second choice though, Mike? Is that, and from what you understand, it was Kiffin and Freeze in that order?
That was it. And so here's the problem, right? You know, Kiffin doesn't work out. Hugh Freeze is number two. The drop from number two to number three was really steep. Very steep. James Franklin, you know, knows how to play the game, knows how to get his name in there for interest, but he wasn't really going to leave. Deion Sanders, completely unqualified. Cadillac Williams, great story, but unqualified as well. Matt Rhule, they were interested in. They had spoken to him, but that wasn't going to happen from the get-go. It was Hugh Freeze. And then what happened is the boosters, the holier and now boosters said, oh, my gosh, we don't want this type of man here, this character issues, blah, 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 blah. So that was Sunday, you know, when it was supposed to be announced. And then everybody started looking at who number three was. And they quickly realized that character issues don't mean crap. Well, you got to win. And that's how it erased. So it was brought up, you know, similar to the Tennessee situation where, you know, Greg Schiano, oh, my God, you know, 20 years ago, he was at Penn State with Sandusky. Let's get rid of him. And Auburn looked at that and said, well, they ended up with Jeremy Pruitt, Chick-fil-A bags, and NCAA sanctions. Okay, so let's not let the boosters completely dictate this. Let's also not let the fan base dictate this. And the boosters also realized our number three choice ain't who we want. If we strike out on Kiffin and Freeze, similar to the Harsin situation, I'm not really sure the pecking order of who they wanted. I know Cristobal was in there, but they struck out on like their first four or five guys when they ended up hiring Harsin. And it obviously turned out to be a disaster. They didn't want to do this. So the moral, you know, outcry was quickly diminished by reality that this is the best coach. This is the best fit. And he's a B+ because he's beaten Nick Saban twice. Name another coach who's done that. I can't. He knows the SEC. He can recruit.
Gus Malzahn?
Did Gus beat him twice?
I don't know. I feel like he's won a couple of Iron Bowls. I could be wrong though. Yeah.
No, you could be right. That's probably right.
That ship already sailed. I mean, unfortunately, Auburn's become the home for wayward Arkansas State coaches at this point, unfortunately. But to your point.
He beat Nick Saban back-to-back. No one's ever done that. That's correct, I know. No one's ever done that. And that kind of should be the interview, right? The interview should be, you know, why do you think you're fit here for Auburn? Well, I beat Nick Saban back-to-back. You're hired. That's it. You know, and that's kind of what it comes down to. He could develop quarterbacks. He could recruit. He's highly motivated to be successful in the SEC after being embarrassed by pushed out with all the off-field stuff. And I get it. But he's the right fit here. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to be successful. The landscape of the SEC is who knows. You know, we're going to no divisions whatsoever, it appears. Alabama has Nick Saban still. He could retire tomorrow or he could retire 6 years from now. It's very, very unknown what the future of the SEC is, but he's a guy who's beaten A&M three times. He's a guy who's beaten LSU twice. He's beaten Georgia. He's beaten Tennessee. He's beaten Alabama and Nick Saban back to back. He's the fit. That doesn't mean he's going to be successful, but I couldn't think of a better hire if it wasn't Kiffin.
Is he going to have a short leash? Did he get the assurances that he wants? I saw, I think it was Ross Dellinger at SI, so I may be quoting this wrong, had a piece that as part of the contract, he has to give up access to social media accounts or something like that. Is that instructive of a short leash that Hugh Freeze is going to have at Auburn?
I think it's just it's posturing. You know, it's funny that those things come out. I mean, remember the Kyler Murray has to watch film thing?
Probably should do that, by the way.
Well, that was true. I mean, it was 100% true. But then it became the light, and it's like, oh, my God.
They might want to put that back in, by the way.
Right. So now you notice they're backtracking a little bit where Hugh Freeze is saying, listen, I don't want to hear anything about Auburn on social media. I don't want to say anything about Auburn on social media. Social media is the devil. They want him to behave, and they don't want him attacked constantly on social media in regards to call girls and hookers. Let's just be honest. That's what
who
they
does,
want.
Right? Who does? Well, that feels natural.
Exactly. So they want to, you know, sort of buffer their program from the scandalous past. This is the other thing too, is that there was an article I think out there, it might've been Ross, it might've been someone else that said they pursued him for months, but then just did a background check Sunday. That's not true. You don't pursue somebody for a position for months and months and months and months, say, please, you know, be interested in us, take the job. And then you're like, oh, let's check you out first. It's just doesn't happen. So they did their due diligence on this. It's not a pretty backstory. I mean, everything you see about Hugh Freeze is about the off-field issues, or it's about Laramie Tunsil in a freaking gas mask smoking out of a bong or whatever. It's about the recruiting violations.
Bombs aren't going to work. Of getting
all these high-level recruits and sort of, you know, having to circumvent the rules to do so. They just want all of that stuff to kind of be put aside, and it will if he wins. If it doesn't, you know, it's a risky hire in that respect, because if he doesn't win, then all that stuff's going to come to light. Assurances? No. You know, this, from what I understand, there's a lot of guaranteed money here. Of course, you're not going to get a coach if that's not the case. It's more than his Liberty extension, which was $5 million a year. I haven't seen the numbers on his deal, but my guess is it's close to the $8 million range, which is a lot of money. But there are provisions in place, cause provisions, all that stuff, more so than a normal contract. That's all I know.
All right. One additional hire made. We'll talk briefly on this one, Mike, because I think I haven't seen your grades on this. I'm curious what your grade is on this one. Arizona State goes and taps 32-year-old Kenny Dillingham, currently the offensive coordinator at Oregon, previous stops at Florida State and Memphis with Mike Norvell. I believe he's an alum. I believe he went to Arizona State. So they tap him on the shoulder, and he's going to replace Herm Edwards, the new coach at Arizona State. Mike, to me, this feels like a really good home run hire. I'm sure he's young and maybe not as long in the tooth as some coaches. But I know you've lauded his offensive mind. I know you've been very complimentary of the work you think he did with Bo Nix this year at Oregon. He now takes over a Sun Devil program, which is maybe facing sanctions, kind of needs to rebuild after some of the Herm Edwards stuff. Grade the hire of Kenny Dillingham to Arizona State.
I think it's a B. I gave it a B because of his age. Otherwise, it would be an A. I mean, he's 32 years old. You don't really know what you're getting as far as, you know, can he be a CEO of a you know, multi-million dollar company? Is he old enough, mature enough to handle this? But this is a dude who was, you know, at Chaparral, which is a huge program in Arizona. You know, he was a GA at Arizona State. He worked under, you know, Norvell. You know, he worked under your buddy Gus, even though he wasn't allowed to call plays. And he worked under Norvell again at Florida State, and you know, came into his own, you know, this year really with the Bo Nix situation. I mean, he took Bo Nix, who was a, you know, improvising colossal disappointment at Auburn, into a non-improvising great talent that rebounded from a 49-3 loss in the opener to Georgia, to a team that actually pushed for the playoff down near the late in the season. So, you know, that's it. They need youth. They need energy. They need somebody who's going to bring that to recruiting. They need an Arizona guy. They need the opposite of Herm Edwards in every capacity here. So it's a risky hire. I mean, you could have gone with a Jim Mora, you know, junior at UConn, who knows the Pac-12, who understands that. You could have gone even, you know, older than that when it comes to experience. But I like this hire because it's risky, but you know, I mean, he's not a cocky guy. He's a very self-confident guy, not cocky, but he's a smart dude, and he's going to learn on the job, and he's going to surround himself with some great coaches.
All right, now let's go to the openings that are still out there, the rumors that are kind of floating around. And we'll start with Deion Sanders. He confirmed on a conference call on Monday, as he prepares for the SWAC championship, that Colorado has indeed offered their head coach job to him. He also dropped a nugget to say others have also, I don't know if he was meaning to say offered him jobs, but at least talked to him about jobs. So he's got allegedly a piece of paper on the table right now from Colorado and maybe others. What do you make of the Deion situation? Do you think Colorado is a fit for him? Is that something he's considering, or is he going to hold out and wait for other jobs? And what are these other schools that you think are contacting Deion?
So I think USF contacted him. It's a great fit for him. I don't know why but it looks like, and we're going to get to that one, I'm sure, in a little bit, and we don't even have to, because it looks like Chadwell is going to take it. Jamie Chadwell from Coastal Carolina. From what I understand, he's going to probably be the next coach there. Colorado's a horrible fit for him. I don't think that's anything that he would be interested in. You know, yeah, Mel Tucker went there, Southeast ties, you know, 1 year and ended up with a, you know, great situation, Michigan State, and a ton of money. Deion doesn't need a great situation. He doesn't need a ton of money. What he needs to do is use his strength, which is his name and his ability to recruit in the Southeast. I don't know who else would have contacted him, honestly. I mean, I think Cincinnati's been in contact. You know, their situation is kind of interesting. Whether it's going to be, you know, Hartline. The coaches there, I mean, Mark D'Antonio, Brian Kelly, Luke Fickell, that's a nice little, you know, not stepping stone job, because I think it's a little bit better than that now that they're in the Power Five. You know, but I think Deion's going to hold. I think there's going to be different, perhaps better opportunities for him next season. The biggest question is, does he want to still be in Mississippi at Jackson State? And that's no offense to Mississippi or Jackson State. It's just like, that is like as far removed from a Power Five job as possible. He's made it a big name because he's a big name and because he's been able to get the Travis Hunters of the world, you know, five-star recruits to go there, which is amazing. But still, he wins every game because his talent, his roster talent is just so much better than everybody else's. It's not a big challenge, and it's not proving to anybody that he can coach at the Power Five level. So I think he's going to hold. USF puzzles me why you wouldn't take that if they did offer him, and it hasn't been public that they have, because he would be a great fit there.
So I'm sorry, you're saying that Jamie Chadwell is going to take the USF job?
That's what I'm hearing. I mean, I don't know for a fact. I mean, this is the funny thing about it, right? I know everybody. And they just pretend they don't know me when they're in the middle.
I want to consider that one day, Mike.
Yeah, you could do. Yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like, and I get it, you know. But there's guys that I talk to on a daily basis that all of a sudden are mentioned for a job, and then it's just ghost city. You know, if I were a, you know, if this were a dating situation, I would feel very hurt because, you know, nobody wants to be ghosted, and I get ghosted by everybody. So I don't know. I'm just hearing from people that Chadwell is going to be the guy.
That sounds interesting to me, though, because his name comes up a lot in some of these other jobs, right? I mean, we'll talk about Georgia Tech next, right? His name was floating around that Georgia Tech job, you know, with no disrespect to USF, right? Obviously, it's a Group of Five job, a complete total rebuild there. While they're in a recruiting-rich state, there's certainly a lot of challenges ahead. You hear Chadwell's name, you know, for some other jobs. Now, to your point earlier, how true some of that stuff is, I guess we don't really know. But it seems interesting that he would take that job when his name's kind of in the mix for other jobs like a Georgia Tech.
But I also think this is crap. I think it's all crap. Again, this is the agent's job. You know, I mean, was a couple years ago, was James Franklin really close to taking the Florida State job? I don't think so. I think this is what agents do. And I think they get their clients' names out there with jobs that really, I don't know if there's interest. Now, Georgia Tech, of course, they should have interest in Chadwell. I think he's a great fit. But they've got other candidates that they like better. And maybe it's like, hey, we want to interview you. Hey, we're interested. But I don't think these guys have like these offers. So when I hear Luke Fickell, you know, oh, my gosh, you turned down USC. No, he didn't. You know, Chadwell may not have other options. USF might be his best option. And it's a better option recruiting wise and to show that he can rebuild a program than Carolina is.
All right, well, on to Georgia Tech. A lot of rumors, speculation that Willie Fritz, the current Tulane head coach, who's playing in the championship this weekend, is their guy. Again, smoke screens are all about other candidates, other interviews. But it seems like Willie's in the driver's seat. What are you hearing down from Atlanta?
Yeah, I think that's going to be announced after this weekend's game. You know, that one, Bill O'Brien, I was a 10-year, I believe, 10-year assistant coach at Georgia Tech. I believe that he was not offered the job, but given every opportunity to say yes to that job. And I don't think he does. I think Bill O'Brien honestly has an eye on going back to the NFL, which is, you know, he's never going to get a situation in Houston where he was the GM and could make all the personnel
decisions. Nor should he, by the way.
Right. Some of the things he did from that side of things weren't good, but from a coaching side of things, some of the things weren't bad. He made the playoff and he had his team competitive. So I think there's interest from the NFL in Bill O'Brien, and I think that's where he wants to go, because people don't understand what a nightmare this NIL stuff is and this portal stuff is. I mean, it's just a nightmare. It's so much work. When you can go maybe be an NFL head coach, or even if you're a coordinator at the college level and you get like a nice high salaried coordinator position in the NFL, you should jump at it, because you know you're dealing with free agency, but you're also dealing with professionals. College is a mess. So I think Bill O'Brien has his eyes on the NFL. That was Georgia Tech's first choice. I think Chadwell was in there, but I think they landed on Fritz, and it'll be announced after this weekend.
Maybe a surprising move. I know you talked about it a few times on previous editions of the Mike Farrell Sports Show here. David Shaw, after the Stanford game, decides that he's going to announce he's stepping down. He's you know, I guess presumably done for a year. We'll see. Who knows with that stuff, right? I mean, I know he's been on TV a bunch, but now Stanford is open, which is really interesting, Mike, because obviously academic standards at Stanford are unlike anywhere else in the country. They don't take transfers like every other school does, or the portal really doesn't. You know, it's only a one-way out situation from a portal standpoint, but it's a Pac-12 job for now. Who knows what happens with conferences and whatnot. So twofold, how surprised are you that Shaw stepped away when he was obviously making a pretty significant chunk of money? And B, what's Stanford going to do now? Who are they going to recruit in there to coach that team?
Yeah, so I heard that he's just, again, you know, he lost coaches, strength and coordinator, strength and conditioning coach. He lost, you know, a lot of the ability to do what he did at Stanford through the portal. They have NIL money, but it's not really a priority at Stanford. So, you know, when David Shaw was putting together like top 15 recruiting classes at Stanford, this was like, you know, early 2000s. It was amazing, but he can't do that anymore. It's impossible. Just not going to happen at Stanford. You know, and with the portal itself, you know, most kids choose Stanford for a reason. They're not going to transfer out, but he can't get anybody in the portal. Just can't. The academics are just so ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a one-way street in the portal for Stanford.
I mean, they can come in and they can leave if they want to, which is rare. We've seen a few of them do it. He can't get anybody. So he can't fix his roster the way everybody else is. And it's not a competitive situation in the Pac-12. Plus, he was like just burnt out and overwhelmed by it all. I mean, juggling the academic responsibilities at Stanford with everything else is not a long-term job. We've seen guys leave before for better jobs. He's leaving for no job. He'll land probably in the NFL. He's got a lot of ties to the NFL. I think Derek Mason might be the target here. You know, he was at Stanford for a while. He did an okay job at Vanderbilt. I thought he was over his head at Vanderbilt. I thought he was way out of his league, and he did better than I expected him to. But he knows how to run academic-first programs. Mike Elko would be a long shot. You know, he's in his first year at Duke, 8-4. He would be a great hire, but is he going to really leave Duke after one season? I'm not sure. I've heard Mike Bloomgren, who was a former Stanford coach, surprising 5-7 season for Rice this year, but is that enough? Troy Taylor, Sacramento State's been mentioned as well. And then you've got the Chris Peterson talk. You know, and Bronco Mendenhall obviously did a good job at Virginia juggling their academics, which aren't like Stanford, but, you know, not bad. Those two guys, I think, will be of interest too, but I think they're going to land on Derek Mason, which I don't think is a good hire. I mean, nothing against Derek Mason, but I don't think he's a guy that's going to move the needle for you. I think Chris Peterson would be the home run here.
couple of small jobs also opened up, Mike, with some firings in no particular order. UNLV, FAU, and Tulsa also popped open. Do any three of those kind of grab you as, hey, that's a really interesting opportunity for a coach?
No. I mean, UNLV is. I mean, you're in Vegas. It's fun. It's exciting. But they didn't give Arroyo time at all. So, you know, I mean, yeah, if they offered a job to you and you're making, you know, a few million dollars coaching the UNLV, that's great. You know, Tulsa has an opportunity to sort of be that, you know, thorn in the side group of five program. I mean, they're intriguing jobs, but they're not, no. I mean, so those are the jobs. Like, if you take that job, you're going to obviously try to have success in your first two or three years there and then jump. They're stepping stone jobs. I don't think any of them could make any waves at the group of five level to any extent where we're going to be talking about them, you know, in November.
And then let's go back to Cincinnati for a second. One of the hot internet rumors out there, and this will be fun for you to talk about. One of the hot internet rumors is that Cincinnati could be potentially an opportunity for one Urban Meyer. Obviously, he's a Cincinnati grad. His son is on Luke Fickell's staff. I see a lot of people on the social media webs trying to connect the dots there. I've seen a bunch of reputable people shoot that down pretty quickly, Mike. So I figured I'd give you the chance to shoot that down as well. Any credence of Urban Meyer?
Never going to happen. Not ever.
You
know, Dion, Brian Hartline, you know, Jason Candle. Yeah, maybe. No. And, it, you know, they could always go Gadilji internally or Kerry Coombs if they wanted to. But, no, Cincinnati's a big deal. You know, honestly, they're going to the Big 12 now. It's a Power 5 program. Urban Meyer would be an absolute home run, but it's not a big enough deal for him. I mean, there's no way. He loves to be set up for success, and they're really not set up for success. Not that they're going to fail, but this isn't like a slam dunk. You know, if this was like 2 years ago, or well, actually heading into last season, you know, knowing that that roster talent is there and so many NFL draft picks on there. I mean, I think they had more NFL draft picks than Michigan. Yeah, maybe he'd jump in there, but no, not now. Nope.
What are you hearing on some of the retread coaches out there? You mentioned Bronco Mendenhall, Chris Peterson, Tom Herman, Scott Frost. Are you hearing any of those names kind of pop up for any of these open jobs?
No, I mean, Tom Herman pops up for Stanford, which I find hilarious because he's the worst fit possible for Stanford. Like, I don't know how – this is one of those things where, you know, again, we're in a coaching carousel where you just throw garbage out there and just make it up, and there's guys that do that. And if it sticks, you look like a genius. And if it doesn't stick, you say, well, that's what I heard. No, I mean, Tom Herman being hired at Stanford would be like, I don't know, given the keys to your drunken uncle at Thanksgiving and telling him to drive everybody home. I mean, what kind of fit would that be?
Not good. No.
Well, this is like, you know, everybody sees, oh, Tom Herman was at Ohio State. No, he didn't do great at Texas, but he was okay at Houston. He was a big name and all that. So that's great. Those are great programs for him to be at. Stanford, they have a little bit of different, you know, situation. I mean, they might as well hire Hugh Freeze. It's just not going to happen. I don't know why his name was put in there. It's just I look at it and I laugh at the people who actually put that name in there. And I'm like, you just have no shame in your game whatsoever. And you'll just say anything, won't you? So, no, Scott Frost is not going to get another head coaching job anytime soon. I don't care if it's Group of Five or not. That was a disaster. It was an absolute disaster. And there are things coming out of there Tom Herman-like out of Omaha, Nebraska. I don't know if you've heard these things. I'm not going to get into the specifics, but it's not just a coaching issue. So there's some things about Scott
Frost. Do they involve a bar?
I just don't think it makes him a
viable. So I've heard this.
To be a head football coach in college football at the Group of Five level and certainly not the Power Five level. And Bronco Mendenhall is definitely mentioned for Stanford. I mean, he did a good job at BYU, obviously, you know, was consistently winning 8-9 games there every year, sometimes more. You know, okay job at Virginia. That was a complete fish out of water, ridiculous, kind of sad hire in a way.
Yeah.
You know, it was a big reach. He did as good as he could there. He'd do okay on the West Coast. I just don't think he's going to, you know, be their top choice at Stanford, though.
All right. So every year, I feel like we have a job that pops open. So last year's example I'll give you is USC popping open, and all of a sudden, you know, Lincoln Riley taking that job. Do you anticipate any sort of big, you know, like jaw dropping changes taking place within some of these big jobs? You don't have to guess now if you don't know anything, but do you anticipate Okay. We got some jaw droppers. Okay.
I know absolutely nothing, but I'll name some schools for you
just for fun. Here we go.
I get jealous of these idiots who like to say stuff that isn't true.
You can be an idiot too, Mike. I'm waiting.
This is the idiot section of my show. Ready?
Perfect. Yes.
Michigan.
I need some music for that. Okay. Okay.
Right.
And so that would require Harbaugh to jump to the NFL, Indianapolis Colts.
I mean, he wanted to go to the Vikings last year. He's as hot as he's ever been. He's always had a little itch for the NFL. I know he came back and promised, you know, he cheated on his wife and then came back and promised he'll never do it again. Okay. How many times has somebody said that? So Michigan. All right.
Okay.
USC. What?
Wow.
Lincoln Riley, we don't know his salary, but it's got to be over $10 million a year. Why would he ever leave there? I just because he left Oklahoma doesn't mean the Dallas Cowboy rumors are just going to go away. Right.
Yeah.
So Lincoln Riley has always been tied to the pros for the last few years. So I'm not saying anything's true about this. This is my ability to throw crap at the wall, see if it sticks.
Okay.
Tennessee, Josh Heupel. I know people in the NFL are intrigued by his offensive prowess and what he's done, you know, from an offensive standpoint. They don't give a crap about recruiting. They don't give a crap about NIL or anything like that. They don't care what he does in the portal. They care that the guy scores a ton of points and he can do so with okay talent and okay quarterbacks. I mean, Hendon Hooker is not the world beater. So Tennessee and the other one is LSU. And I know people will be like, what, are you crazy? You know, he's got guaranteed money there. Brian Kelly has always had a little itch, too, for the NFL.
He's flirted a few times, yeah.
Yes. He almost took the Eagles job.
Colts, I mean, Eagles, if I remember correctly,
100 years ago, he almost took the Eagles job. And it led to some decommitments at Notre Dame, I remember specifically that year. You know, maybe he doesn't like jumbo, you know, jambalaya. Maybe he doesn't like, you know, faking a Southern accent. Maybe he doesn't like the summers in Baton Rouge. I don't know. I don't know the man. I just know that the job he did here when his roster, I believe, is down to 49 scholarship players at one point, and what he did at the portal, and he's shown he's a great coach. Now, this past weekend aside, they sucked. They looked horrible. No excuse to lose to Texas A&M, a team that just gave up. Aside from that, though, he's done an amazing job. There's no doubt in my mind that these guys, Jim Harbaugh's agent's going to get calls. Mike Riley's agent's going to get calls. Josh Heupel's agent and Brian Kelly's agents are going to get calls. Now, Dabo Swinney's agent is going to get calls, too. He's not going anywhere. But, you know, if I'm throwing crap at the wall, these are some guys that could
stun. It's interesting. There are going to be some NFL openings. Obviously, we know the Colts are already open. The Panthers are already open. I think, you know, you don't have to be a genius to know that Cliff Kingsbury is probably in trouble in Arizona at some point. That may open. It's not really working well for Nathaniel Hackett in Denver. That one may pop open. So it feels like there are openings that are coming that could come out of the pipeline.
I mean, how long can you stay with Lovie? Lovie Smith? That was a horrible hire. I mean, I don't know.
That's fair, yeah.
Drunken fools were in a room that said, I know. Lovie Smith.
He's the drunken fools who said, I know Bill O'Brien, I suppose.
Or said Urban Meyer or Jackson. I really want to be a fly on the wall at some of these meetings from these, you know, and I also want to be a fly on the wall in college. I want to be a fly on the wall in that booster meeting at Texas A&M that said, I know, let's give Jimbo $100 million guaranteed and no out to the contract. That's a great idea. Like, there's so many stupid things that occur. The Bears have a first year coach, so you assume he's not going to be gone. You know, McVay could jump to Amazon. You don't know.
Yeah. That's fair. That's fair.
You know, Kingsbury just signed an extension, but he sucks. They got to get rid of him.
They're imploding by the minute. They're
horrible. I mean, and you know what? They did two mistakes. They hired a petulant little brat and not hired, but they drafted a petulant little brat in Kyler Murray. And they got a guy who had no business coaching the NFL. I mean, this was a guy who was not a well-rounded coach at Texas Tech. He was going to USC as the offensive coordinator. Oh, let's make him our head coach. Like, how does that even happen? Was somebody hiring based on his devilish good looks? I mean, I don't understand some of these decisions, Matt LaFleur ain't exactly solid at Green Bay, in my opinion. There's other coaching opportunities that could come up, but you know, Lovie Smith 1-9-1. So you just don't know. You don't know. I mentioned the Cowboys, right? Mike McCarthy's 8-3.
Oh, when we lose the first round playoff game again this year, right? Jerry's going to get super impatient.
And Jerry's
always super impatient. Jerry's by the way.
And if Dak comes out and he goes 8-24 again, sucks it up, and they lose the first round of playoffs after this is the year the Cowboys are going to win out, you just don't know.
But it'd be interesting, though, because Arizona and Carolina are both coming off of essentially bad tenures with college coaches to NFL. So you wonder if they would make that same mistake again. But again, you got the Colts, you got the Broncos, you never know with the Rams, right? There may be opportunities for you put Matthew Stafford in a Josh Heupel offense. Like, I mean, I could see how you might get drunk off that if you're Stan Kroenke. Like, hey, you know what? This might work for us in LA.
Well, and the other thing, too, is, I mean, McVay's not on the hot seat. He could go to Amazon for $1 billion. I mean,
he's probably got a concussion this week. He got blasted on the sideline.
but the idiots that made these decisions could make the same idiotic decisions. I mean, we've seen stupid people do stupid things over and over again. It rarely works when you go from college to the NFL, just rarely. But yet here we are again, over and over again. We see it happen, and it's going to happen again. And I'm not saying any of these guys are going anywhere. I'm just saying that if you're looking for a stunning, shocking January announcement, keep an eye on those four schools.
All right, let's do a transition to other people who sometimes make baffling decisions, Mike, and that is the College Football Playoff Committee. We're talking Tuesday morning. Rankings will come out again here tonight, Mike. I think I've got a tab in the top four. Can I give you my top four?
Go ahead.
And you tell me if I'm an idiot or if I'm not.
Go ahead.
At number four, I have USC. At number three, I have TCU.
Yep.
At number two, I have Georgia. And at number one, your Michigan Wolverines.
You're funny.
I think committee's going to go absolutely bananas for how much they hand. I know how you feel about it. There's been an overinflated sense of Ohio State. We saw that clearly happen. Yep. I think the committee's going to go, hey, they handled business on the road. Ooh. Ohio State, rivalry game. Georgia beat Georgia Tech. What does that even mean? They struggled in the first half. I think you get Michigan to one, Georgia to two.
Never will that happen. Not never, ever, ever. Because A, it's the SEC. I know the Big Ten is worth a lot of money and all that stuff, and I know a lot of viewers and all that. Michigan's a big brand. I get that. No. Never. Georgia.
But you're missing the fun here, though, Mike, because if you get Georgia at two, TCU at three, I think most people would say, hey, that's an easy march into the championship game for Georgia. You know, if they're playing USC and they were the one seed and USC was the four seed, that may be harder. So I think this actually paths Georgia to the finals a lot easier.
I'm not saying it doesn't make sense. I'm saying they're never going to do it. And first of all, I mean, Michigan's beaten Ohio State, which clearly looks vastly overrated, and they beat Penn State. Those are the only two good wins this season. You know, and Georgia doesn't have a lot of good wins either. I mean, they blasted Tennessee, but the SEC East hasn't been that great. And you know, a win over Georgia Tech's not going to really impress anybody. But they're just not. I mean, last week, I believe it was 58 votes for Georgia. AP wise, it was 58 votes for Georgia last week. You know, they're going to look at all of these factors and say, well, why would we possibly put Michigan over a Georgia team that's undefeated, that has a victory over an Oregon team that's, you know, just fell apart in Corvallis? But it's fairly highly rated over a Tennessee team that was number one in the country at the time. You can make an argument if you want to that Michigan's resume is equal, not better. I mean, because look at some of these wins, you know, Missouri, Auburn, Vanderbilt, Florida, Kentucky, Mississippi State, all these teams kind of are average, but they're not going to leapfrog them. If let's say Ohio State was number one last week and Michigan drilled them like they did, then Michigan would jump to number one, but not jumping Georgia is going to be impossible. So my top four is, you know, Georgia, Michigan, TCU, USC. The intriguing thing here is
it gets fun after that, though, Mike. Who's 5-6?
Well, 5 is Ohio State. I don't think that's going to change. And then 6 is Alabama.
Okay.
And technically, you know, when you look at some of the committee you know, criteria, Tennessee should be ahead of Alabama.
I was going to say, so then where's that then, right? So then that puts Alabama behind or in front of Tennessee. So my assumption would be 5 Ohio State, 6 Alabama, 7 Tennessee, right? Because Clemson, Oregon both lost, right? So Tennessee pops up. So they sit behind an Alabama team that they beat.
Yeah, and so those 7 are the only ones really in consideration for anything. And you can make an argument that Tennessee should be ahead of Alabama because they beat them head-to-head. They got better wins overall. And you know, common opponents, they've done better as well. But Alabama's Alabama, so they're going to be 6th. Tennessee will be 7th. So really it comes down to, you know, does TCU get eliminated if they lose one game? I think they do. I think they'll be pushed out of the top 4 immediately. You know, does USC get eliminated with a 2nd loss? I think they would. And my Utah team is a difficult out. Are you going to have Ohio State back in there, you know, for the 2nd time in playoff history, not winning their division, you know, much less their conference? You probably will if one of those 2 teams loses. And then does Alabama sneak back in? If TCU and USC lose, does Alabama get back in? And I think the answer to that is yes.
I agree. Yeah. And I think that's the Tennessee argument that comes back up again. I think Tennessee gets hurt because they had their losses. They have the worst loss between them and Alabama, right? When that South Carolina
State game. And they got drilled in both their losses, where Alabama's lost by 4 points on the last possession of each game. So,
So chaos comes if both TCU and USC lose somehow on Friday and Saturday. Then you get an Ohio State Alabama in there, which will be that would be Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, Alabama as your 4, which should be pretty much what you chalked in as the season started off, right? Two teams from 2 conferences, right?
Kind of weird. It's funny. You know, I didn't chalk in Michigan. I was wrong. That's on fair. Michigan. I thought they would have some losses that weren't expected this season. Their schedule was ridiculously easy, but I felt last year was an aberration, and I credit Jim Harbaugh to proving everybody wrong. And the best revenge is success, and he's had it. So I didn't have them. Obviously nobody really had USC. I mean, the people who mentioned USC as a playoff contender were like, are you crazy? They were 4-8 last year. Their offensive defensive lines are not good. He can bring transfers in, but he's not gonna be able to fix that immediately. But yeah, Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia were certainly up there. So that's no surprise. Be nice to see Ohio State get back in there, right? And then, you know, maybe the number 4 seed and then play Georgia. Or how about the number 3 seed if TCU and USC lose and then a rematch with Michigan in the playoff? That would be fun. Not fun for Ryan Day, I'll tell you that much. Now, nothing's fun for Ryan Day in life, because if they don't make the playoff, it's going to be a really, really long offseason. If they do make the playoff, he better win it all. Because if he doesn't, then it's going to be like big game Ryan can't coach, because he lost to Clemson in the semifinals. He lost to Alabama in the finals. He's lost to Michigan twice in a row. He goes to the playoff, loses to Michigan in the first round, or perhaps loses to Georgia in the first round. Death. Now, he gets to the final. Let's say he gets to the championship game. And let's say it's against Michigan and he loses that. Death. There's no – the only – only redeemable quality for Ryan Day right at this point is to win a national championship. That's the only thing that's going to shut people up. And it's amazing because he's 45-5, but that's the job. It's the job.
Hot seat. Really quickly, give me, I know we're probably a week away. Give me your who's going to New York? Who are the 4 or 5 Heisman finalists that you have right now?
It's a really good question. So Caleb Williams has it 1. I think that's over. I honestly think, you know, C.J. Stroud will get there. We know that. He's meh to me.
Yep.
I think Hendon Hooker will get there.
Got to invite Hendon Hooker. I agree.
It should be Max Duggan. It should 100% be Max Duggan. There should be no doubt Max Duggan deserves a trip to New York. He probably won't get there. They might throw Bryce Young in there just because.
Okay.
But I don't think they should.
No Blake Corum?
A player. Blake Corum deserves there too, but I don't know if they will. I could tell you this. I would pick Caleb Williams as my Heisman winner, and my runner-up would be Max Duggan.
Fair enough. All right. Again, MikeFerrellSports.com is where you can catch up on everything Mike's working on, too. I was going to get to that, but before you go anywhere around that, I think Mike wants to give you some good news about Bet Online, Mike. I think there's some good stuff going on there. You want to share with the group.
Bro. So
here's your ButcherBox. It's basketball season. I know that, by the way. Yeah.
Listen, meet in a box. ButcherBox.com, meat in a box. That's my pitch for them. I don't have a read for them. So if you're asking me to pitch ButcherBox, that's it, meat in a box. Bet online. Basketball is back. Bet online remains your number one source for all your sports betting needs this season. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup information, player news, and game trends at Bet online. And as your continued source for all sports wagering information, Bet online features live betting, free contests, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports and events, whether that's NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, or even golf. Head to betonline.ag to join. Receive our 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, to receive your rewards. Bet online where the game starts. I can tell you this. I've had some customer service experiences with a couple other gambling sites. It's been horrible. It's been miserable. It's been awful. Bet online, a little bit better than that when it comes to customer service. So if you want to put your money in there and develop sort of a fun little non-harmful gambling problem, bet online.
That's where you want to go. Again, MikeFerrellSports.com. Also where you want to go, follow Mike on social media stuff at MFerrellSports. And check out that YouTube channel. There's some Mike in the Worlds up there. There's probably some more coming in the next couple of days. So sit tight on those. Again, website, championship weekend coming up here. We'll be back next week. I'm sure to break all that down and then talk about all the endless bowls. I cannot wait to talk about the Cheez-It Bowl, Mike. I'm already doing research now for the Cheez-It Bowl. There should be more than two.
Well, I got to tell you, so when I eat Cheez-Its, I eat it by the box because I'm a fat person and I can't stop eating. I had Cheez-Its ridged ranch cheddar. I mean,
change your life.
Well, listen, if I'm going to die of something, I kind of think that's what I want it to be this week anyways. You know, put some cheese, some sliced cheese. I mean, if you want to go easy cheese, which is the greatest cheese known to man, just unbelievable. So Cheez-Its, if you want to be a sponsor.
So you want the corner report to say Michael J. Farrell, cause of death, Cheez-It?
Yeah, and I want a Cheez-It box on my chest in the casket because that's how I went. I don't know why I'm doing a Cheez-It commercial. Whatever. We're going to talk bowls. I like mayonnaise too. We can talk about mayonnaise. So let's talk about like every sponsor as much as the game itself because isn't there like a chainsaw sponsor too? I like chainsaws.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.